Okay, hello and welcome to Going Native, episode number 61. As always, I'm Steve Carroll. I'm the dev manager for the Visual C++ team here at Microsoft. And today we have a new folk. Hey, new folk.
Hi, I'm Kyle Reed, and I'm on the C++ static analysis team.
Cool. And when did you join us?
I joined at the middle of May, and so I just barely missed what we're talking about. shipping, but it's been a really good 3 months so far, and I've really enjoyed the work.
Okay, so like which of the teams are you on here? We got a couple.
So I work on static analysis, so that's the part of the code. I don't
know. Part of the product.
It's part of the product that we ship as part of Visual Studio that runs basically code checks to make sure that your code is safe and secure. Internally, we run a lot of the checks for, security reasons. So,
yeah. So, like, indeed, I'd say there are like two big categories of things that we do, and we have this sort of the pre-fast checks. These are the ones that which we call pre-fast internally in the product. This is CL/analyze and all the rules that it runs. And then the second category of things is
CPP core check. So this is the new improved public-facing product that we are working on. That
every day you get to come in and type into.
Yeah, and what its job is to help you modernize your code base using the C++ core guidelines.
Okay, that's so. I actually think that the CPP core guidelines are super cool and everyone should know about them. But I suspect that many of the folks watching at home have not yet had kind of much exposure to it at all. So do you want to talk a little bit about what they are?
Yeah. So the C++ core guidelines, or CPP core guidelines as we kind of call them, are a set of rules or guidelines or principles that have been put together by a committee of C++ gurus. Including
a legion of experts,
pretty much. Yes. And the purpose of the guidelines is to help you write more modern C++ code. And what that means really is using the new features, using some of the new library types, such as the new smart pointers that do better resource allocation and management, tracking, things like that.
New for certain values of new.
new-ish, I guess. It, basically, to help guide you toward code that is safer, is more idiomatic, and simpler.
Right. I think, in particular, the safety is an important aspect of it. And in some ways, it's like, I was actually, in preparation for this episode, kind of rereading them and kind of going through them and being like, okay, yes. And they're a really good education tool.
Right.
I think we live in a world right now where hey, it's my birthday. I'm old. I'm not that old though, but I've been writing C++ since I was in college 20 years ago, right? And the C++ we were writing at that viewpoint, the thing I was taught to do by the people who were teaching us how to write code, was vastly different than what we would do. It's not like that code was, we didn't know at the time that we were not doing it right or something like that. But as the language has evolved and as we've learned things about, my education predates, internet worms, for instance.
Sure.
And so security is so much more important and whatnot now. And these things really can be a way to take programmers like me who, especially because I actually had a little period where I went off and was a C# programmer effectively for a while.
Yeah.
Because I worked at Microsoft, but then, I came back here because C++. And it was this awesome educational opportunity.
Yeah, And actually, I have a very similar story where, the C++ I learned in college was, I guess the 2003 standard. And when I came to Microsoft, I was on a C# team and spent quite a long time on C#. And when I got back onto a team where I was writing C++ and I got reintroduced to modern C++, I was amazed at how confident I could be in the quality, in the safety, in the performance of the code that I could write in modern C++ in a way that I couldn't do in C or in the basically C. C with classes.
C with classes, yeah.
So,
which is where I came in at.
Exactly. And so that new that new C++ really is what got me re-excited about it and why I eventually wanted to join this team.
Yeah, exactly. And so like I think there's like basically like a Monday morning conference call more or less where folks get together and talk about this. And you kind of alluded to this sort of legion of experts. Mm-hmm. And like if you go onto the link I'm sure is below right now and click through to the guidelines, yeah. You can kind of go to the contributors page on GitHub because it's this, basically the guidelines themselves is this document that's that's hosted on GitHub and gives you all sorts of that information that you can use. But you can also go and check the contributors and it'll give you kind of a sense of it. So like some of the biggest contributors are, of course, Myrna Strustrup. We have a bunch of people at Microsoft, mm-hmm. like Herb and Neil. Your boss, Neil McIntosh. And but there's also folks in there from Google, mm-hmm. Titus, and as well as we have a major people from like the GCC community. Mm-hmm. So it really is intended to be this across the entire industry thing where people come together and say like, what are our best practices, and try our best to encode them.
Yeah, and I like the like header README on the GitHub site has a quote from Bjarne. It's pretty great. Within C++ is a smaller, simpler, safer language struggling to get out. I just think that's a really great, great way to think about what the guidelines are. It's not so much a prescriptive, thou shalt code like this. It's a set of ideas and principles, and like they even say on the site, it's many committee hours of expertise that helps people. Here's what works best in C++, and that's really what they're trying to get people on. So the code bases are on that. This is the best C++.
Right, and one thing that I think also we want to kind of stress is this idea that what's written there is not written in standardese. It's not like going to CPP reference and trying to be like, well, if it's a Z val, then do that. Like, no, it's not like that. It's written with lots of examples and a before and an after.
Yeah, pretty much everything has a don't do this, do this, which is really helpful because it helps, like you said, it helps you learn what the bad practices are, but not just what the bad practices are, how to fix them, how to, solve that going forward.
Okay, so before we like jump into the details on what the guidelines themselves are, I want to talk about one more thing, mm-hmm. which is like, hey, it turns out most C++ code bases are not like written de novo, like fresh.
Right.
So like, what do you think about that? Like, how does somebody get started, do you feel like?
So if you do start with a new code base, then what you want to do is turn on the checks, follow the guidelines if you can, and you will stay clean. You'll be on the best practice path.
And if you have common pitfalls, right?
Yeah. And if you have an old code base, what we part of the work that we did in the last release was help build. We built rule sets. We don't want to talk about that yet, but we built rule sets that help you sort of onboard gradually.
Selection. Right. And rules to use.
And so what the guidance is basically to look at the set of rules on the CPP core check rules, pick things that resonate, things that you think will be high impact, to start to burn those down, and do that iteratively, because any change to your existing code base that follows the guidelines is almost always a change for good, and so the goal is then to make your change, move on to the next change, stabilize, move on to the next change, move on to the next change, and just instead of trying to take everything all at once,
right?
Just because do what you can.
So let's be honest. I'm a manager, right? And so I know I, the guy helping to get this thing to exist in the universe, am never going to tell my team, hey, you know what? Just take a few weeks off and go make your code work really well with the guidelines. It's not a realistic thing to expect, especially with large legacy code bases. Like, I don't know. Ours. Effectively, I think they're designed in a way that they're independent. They have groupings and categories.
Yes.
So you can decide to do one without having done them all.
Yes.
Right.
And, in the rules, they're not really in any kind of particular priority order, but there are certain classes that if you were to burn these down, you would have safer code. And if you burn these down, you have
faster code.
Yeah. Or more expressive, more easily
understood
yeah. better API surfaces that are more expressive about ownership and things like that.
So that, like, in some ways, it's like you're almost like designing your API surface
right.
so that people will fall into sort of the pit of success instead
right.
of the pit of failure. Right. Okay. All right. So now let's transition into like the actual content of the rules. So I'll push you on the spot. What is he is not prepped for this.
Yeah.
What is your favorite rule?
I think the favorite rule
guideline. It's not a rule.
Favorite guideline. Yeah. It's definitely going to be the guidelines around using the std shared pointer and std unique pointer.
Okay.
Why those are
Give
so
me an
important?
Example one.
So if you have a function and it does some allocates a new buffer or something like that.
Okay.
And so you have a pointer to a new buffer and
like a raw pointer?
A raw pointer. You have a raw pointer to a new buffer and you walk through the code and oops, you early return or throw or something like that without cleaning up that buffer.
Okay.
Well, now you've just leaked memory. And so the guidelines are saying, you know, just don't use new. Don't manage memory yourself. Use the, RAII principles. Right. And those are encapsulated in standard C++ with the shared pointer and the unique pointer.
Yep.
And so if you use those instead of allocating your new buffer, you make shared or make unique and get a pointer to your buffer. And when you have that same code path and then throws, well, through the magic of destructor calls, you're not leaking memory anymore. And so that's just a really simple one that you can use to help fix memory leaks, keep your API services clean. It makes the code more maintainable because you don't have to worry about every conditional branch anymore. So just generally, if you can start there, that's a really good rule to, I think, or guideline.
I think it's a great example because effectively, I think literally every experienced C++ developer has had to work in a code base that has that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other thing that's great about it is in a lot of circumstances, you can make local fixes.
Mm-hmm.
So like we're working with like an internal code base right now inside of Microsoft that we're kind of helping kind of onboard into this to give us that really, really raw feedback on what's working, what's not working inside of our checkers. And, one of the things that's great is whenever you can go and say, I have this one class and this class has had a bazillion leaks and those leaks are problems because whatever. Perf or security or whatever, use after free, these sorts of problems. And you can still say, run this, on this subset of what I'm doing and kind of very quickly get that benefit out of it without having to say, okay, let's do the whole thing.
Right.
6 months
right.
off, everybody.
Right.
It's time to remove the news. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. The other one that I like, it's not as impactful necessarily, but I like it from an API wonk's perspective.
Like a design, like
I really
designer
like, yeah, using const in your code to be very explicit about who gets to modify something. When I use const on a parameter, for example, the const on that parameter sets up a contract of how that function should be using that pointer or that reference or whatever, and the guidelines around using const when you mean to express that I'm not going to change something, I am going to change something. So the lack of const should imply, right, that you are going to change something versus, the const implying that you shouldn't or aren't going to change. The why I like that is because it again gives you, it helps you fall into the right pattern, the right usage of an API. It's more intuitive when I look at a signature, so it's more approachable, I think, especially when you're dealing with raw memory.
Right. So. Okay, I think those are some great examples. I think it gives people a flavor for sort of like what we're doing here, why it's important, why they should care. Now we got some examples. I think the next thing we should do is let's jump into a demo.
Okay, so let's get started with CPP Core Check. First, you will need to enable a core checker, and to do that, right-click on your project, and then on the bottom, expand the code analysis tree. And on the extensions node, you have to enable the C++ Core Check released extension. So click yes on the dropdown and click apply. Then go to the general node, and you have to enable a code analysis on the build. This enables analysis generally for the build. Then pick the rule set you want to use. by default, it's Microsoft All Rules or Microsoft Native Recommended Rules. To use the C++ Core Check rules, use the C++ Core Check rule set. This includes all of the rules from the C++ Core guidelines that we currently have implemented. We'll talk more about rule sets in a bit. Click Apply or OK, and now you just rebuild your project to see the analysis output. You can see in the build output there are warnings, and these are from the core checker, core guidelines checker. You can also see the errors in the error list. If you click on an entry, you'll see it in the editor window. And if you click on the warning number, you will get linked to the C++ core guidelines entry for the rule that's being checked. In this case, it's to not use reinterpret casts. And it's telling you to avoid these casts or to use a name cast instead. So back to the code, let's look at some of the other warnings that came up. The next set of rules that are really interesting for the 15.3 release is the resource management rules, R3, R5, and R11. So if you look at this example, you'll see that there's a buffer called, as an int buffer, and it's being passed to a function called readData, which if it returns insufficient space, we reallocate with a larger buffer size. But you'll notice here that the buffer was not deleted after it was nuked here, and so you've leaked memory. And so the resource rules, so R11, suggest that we just don't use new, don't call new, and instead use make unique. We also see that we flag the call to new here. We also see this warning, R3, to not assign to an owner T. So an owner T is basically a pointer which is being tracked as the sole owner of a block of memory. So in this case, we see that the sole owner of a block of memory has been reassigned, which indicates that that previous block has been leaked. Finally, we see rule 5, or R5, which suggests that we don't use delete, but instead, again, use a scoped object like shared pointer or unique pointer. The last set of rules that we implemented in 15.3 refer to the constness of parameters and of locals. So if we look at this example, we can see that the pointer argument buffer is not used in any non-const calls. Process bytes takes the buffer by const pointer. So buffer could be marked const, and it makes the API service more consistent and understandable. I know now that if this is marked const, that buffer won't be modified in the context of this function. And it's also, from a maintainability perspective, buffer will not be modified by any future updates without causing a compiler error. Also, you can see that buffer size is a local that could be made const because it is only assigned once. And this is just good practice to mark your locals that are only used once as const, so that way they're not accidentally reassigned later in the code in future maintenance. And the last thing I want to point out in terms of the warnings for 15.3 is that we now understand the GSL types, the owner type. The GSL is the guideline support language, and it can be found on GitHub. Basically, it's an implementation that works of a library that works in conjunction with the core guidelines to help make your code more explicit about ownership and basically make it safer when dealing with spans or raw pointers. So in this case, we can see that getRandomSequence returns a GSL owner of an int pointer. What that lets us do is be explicit in the API about who gets ownership of some allocated object, allocated memory. In this case, sequence now is owned by this function, and so we can expect that this function will either pass ownership to something else, or it is responsible for cleaning up. In this case, we can see the warning R3, reset or explicitly delete an owner T pointer. The reason we're seeing this warning is because the sequence object is not deleted on this code path here. And so what that is a memory leak. It is deleted here. It doesn't tell you where, it doesn't tell you on which branch it's, the delete is missing, but it does tell you that there is a missing, or there is a way out of the function without properly cleaning up the memory. And finally, we also see that we understand the GSL type with the delete rule. So if we were to go through and, for this specific one, add a delete and rebuild, we would see that that warning would go away. And you'll see that that rule is no longer there. And what's left instead is the avoid calling delete explicitly. So Steve and I talked about how you would onboard this to an existing project. With a new project, it's very easy to get started with all the rules. With an existing project, the number of warnings that you might encounter might be a little daunting. So what we recommend instead is to enable the warnings one at a time, get clean on those warnings that make sense for your project, and then add additional warnings or enable additional warnings. So part of the work we did in 15.3 is to build some helpers for you to incrementally enable these checks. So the first way I wanted to show is if you go on the project back to where we enabled the rule set, we have some additional rule sets. And these rule sets are subsets of the overall CPP core guidelines checks that we've implemented. So for example, if we only wanted to look at the resource rules or the raw pointer rules or the owner rules, we can click those. So let's just enable the owner pointer rules for a second and then we'll rebuild. So make sure we rebuild so that the analysis reruns. And now we should only see the warnings that are applicable to owner T scenarios or raw pointer scenarios in this case. So that's one way that you can enable, that you can restrict your rule set to just a subset of the rules. You can also choose multiple rule sets here and pick the rules that you want to enable. Now, in order to do this, you have to save your own custom rule set. I'm not going to do that for this demo. The next way to disable warnings is by using the warnings header and the macros to suppress the sets of rules individually in a code file. So if you look at warnings.h, you can see that we have all of the CPP core check warnings with their warning numbers and some macros which indicate the rule sets. To use these, include CPP core check / warnings.h, and then you can use pragma disable, pragma warning disable, and pragma warning default to enable or disable rules. In this case, we disable all core check warnings and then re-enable the const warnings. So now when we rebuild, we should only see const warnings. For more information about other ways to suppress warnings in your code, check out the blog that's linked below. The final way to suppress warnings is to use the GSL suppress attribute. So let's go down to the bottom here, and actually what we're going to do is just comment out all of this code. Go to the bottom. So here we can see when we rebuild, we should see an R11 and an I11 warning for this piece of code. Okay. Now we can use the GSL suppress attribute to disable a specific warning. So let's use the I11 warning. Rebuild, And you should see that the I11 warning is suppressed. So now all that's left is the R11 warning. And you can also suppress an entire class of guidelines. So this is suppressing all of the I guidelines. If we rebuild, we should see the same. If you need to suppress both at the same time, just stack the attributes.
All right, Kyle, great demo. Thank you. So, call to action for this episode. First thing I want you to do, if this stuff is interesting to you, is go to the guidelines webpage, which is actually a, sort of an MD file, a markdown file on GitHub. We'll have the link to that below. I think, you know, I'd strongly recommend you just start by reading that. Like I certainly did. You don't have to. You can very much sample from there, get a feel from it just by picking a few different categories and reading a few rules. But I got wrapped up in it and, you know, found I learned a lot from just doing that, just in terms of new tricks that I had thought of before. Once you got that and you've got your kind of piece of code that you're ready to go with and want to try out, what you're going to want to do at that point is get 15.3 Visual Studio 2017, which is in the release channel right now. I also want to encourage you, everyone watching, if you're the kind of person who wants to be like kind of the sort of forerunner on your team of, you know, you're like the vanguard C++ guy on your team, I want you to try to get into the Visual Studio 2017 preview channel. That will install side by side, and we'll continue to make more and more of these new checks available as those happen. And so, you know, the preview channel is a great way for you to see where we're going with this and even have feedback that can help us learn you know, how to make it better for you. Yeah. And finally, we're going to have blog posts below that will point you to details about all these new checks that are in 15.3 and how to get started.
Yep.
All right. Thanks a lot for coming, Kyle.
Thank you.
And see you next month.